It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 69, a podcast which looks at world news and views from a Christian perspective. Coming to you from downtown Sydney, a very smoky downtown Sydney as the bushfires continue around the city. But we're going to go away from Sydney to start with, and we're going to go to Hong Kong, where this gentleman, Simon Cheng, testified about his torture by the Chinese authorities.
And then they handcuffed me like this.
So your hands are cuffed, and they hang you on something?
Yes, exactly. And for several hours, and then you feel very painful, and you shiver. Your legs will shiver.
And you cannot stand still. And if you tried to sit down or stop, what would happen?
They would beat me. Yeah. And then even...
Did they beat you?
Yeah, of course.
Now, what's significant about that? The most significant thing is just simply that he was working for the UK consulate in Hong Kong. And for the Chinese authorities to torture a UK consulate employee is really quite extraordinary. His testimony is actually extraordinary as well. And what's going on in Hong Kong, we continue to remember. Chinese troops have been involved a little bit. The violence has increased. Some of the protesters are getting more and more violent, and it does look as though it is escalating. It's a mess, and I think that one can only fear for the people of Hong Kong. But they're not the only people where there have been protests. We mentioned last week Bolivia, and a year ago, the Gilets Jaunes in France started their protests. Now, I found it quite interesting that I was speaking to a French lady who told me that she now lives here, and she told me that she had moved here because of the violence. She was fed up of the violence. And let's just say a little bit about the Gilets Jaunes, because it's not exactly reported a lot in the UK press. Virtually every weekend, in fact, every weekend for the past year, there have been major protests on the streets of France. There have been riots and so on. Why? Well, there was a fuel tax hike implemented at a time when the price of diesel had already risen by 23% in a single year. Only 13% of people in Paris drive cars, but the vast majority of people who live outside the major cities rely heavily on their cars, and particularly working class people. So it was kind of a carbon tax that disproportionately affected the working class. And it is the poor who are going to pay the most for climate change. It is the wealthy, for climate change activists. And that's one of the things that really bothers me. The wealthy make money out of wind farms. The wealthy will be able to continue to fly, but it's the poor who will be forced, because of increasing travel taxes, not to be able to fly or use transport. One of the yellow vest slogans, the Gilets Jaunes slogans that I really liked was this: the government talks about the end of the world, we're talking about the end of the month. And there's another aspect of this as regards France, which is also relevant to the United Kingdom. And that was after the 2005 referendum on the European Constitution. The majority of the French electorate, by 55%, voted to reject it. But the political class in France and in the EU all agreed that that would not be accepted. And just a few years later, the rejected constitution was simply repackaged as the Lisbon Treaty and signed into law. And I think the democratic dissatisfaction with the system from then has been exacerbated. And that's a lesson for the United Kingdom today as well. A Okay, let's just come to Australia and let's think about Christianity and politics. Here is the foreign editor of The Australian speaking on a program called The Drum.
It's an extremely eccentric position, not held by many serious scholars at all, to posit Jesus as a political revolutionary. But I do think that we're wrong to confuse Christianity with conventional politics. I mean, Christianity rests on supernatural claims, which are all through the gospel. Jesus himself says, you know, before Abraham, I am who am. You know, I watched Satan fall like thunder from the clouds and so on, and makes all kinds of supernatural claims. And Christians have to be upfront about what they believe. If it's just a sort of kumbaya feel-good thing, then, you know, frankly, I'd rather be at the races. And of course, that doesn't imply hostility to other religions. Where I'd agree with Reza...
No, I thought this was remarkable. His book... about God is hugely, how God is good for us, is hugely an important book. And he's basically arguing that Christianity should not be equated with modern politics on either right or left. And he's also arguing what people should know, that Christianity does have to do with the supernatural. I thought it was lovely to hear this on a mainstream program. Very interesting also to hear an Aboriginal activist, Brooke Prentice, say the following.
Jesus is the greatest social justice warrior that we've ever seen. And I think Jesus is looking down on Australia and that passage in the Bible where he goes through the temple and he flips all the tables. Australia is a big map as a table and Jesus is smashing it because as Aboriginal people, our dignity has still not been recognised. We're still trying to fight for us to be seen as made in the image of God. And colonisation in these lands now called Australia is closely tied to Christianity. And so that's still...
Jesus is smashing Australia because of the way people are being treated. Now, it's interesting that she could say that and not have any backlash against it. Now, why do I say there would be a backlash? She could possibly be right. But when Israel Folau said that Jesus was punishing Australia with the bushfires because of same-sex marriage and so on, there was absolute outrage. Now, personally, I think if he's quoted correctly, and that's a big if, I think that would be wrong. I think it's too simplistic, and I don't think it works in lots of different ways. But it's interesting the double standards that are applied in this case. Or when the Greens suggest that it's Mother Earth who's punishing us for not taking care of her. Just interesting. Let's move to another country, and you can guess which this one is from the music. And there's some interesting things happening in the United States. And again, I'm sorry, but they're not particularly good. One is this, that for the first time, I think, in recorded memory, the United States last month admitted zero refugees. Now, there's a little bit of a statistical quirk in there in the way that records are kept, but nonetheless... that is a very, very depressing statistic. I've been to Ellis Island. You see the Statue of Liberty, you know. Give me your poor. Give me your oppressed. And the idea that the United States either doesn't accept refugees or is just cutting back on the number of refugees it accepts, I don't find that an encouraging thing at all as a Christian. I know there are a significant number of illegal immigrants, and I know that there are all kinds of problems, but refugees, people who need refuge from wars and famine and other troubles throughout the world, it's shameful on any wealthy country like the US, like the UK, like Australia, if they don't accept refugees. Another thing that's a shame on a country is what's happened with Planned Parenthood. Now, Planned Parenthood is, you could call it Planned Non-Parenthood because it's famous for providing millions of abortions. And a few months ago, in fact, last year, a man called David
Dalaidan, he secretly recorded some deals with Planned Parenthood in which they bargained for body parts. Now, no one doubts that these things actually happened. It's the kind of thing that reporters do. But he was sued by Planned Parenthood. And today, or rather this week, he had to come up with $2 million, I think. The Center for Medical Progress, who are helping him, pointed out that this was a gross injustice, not least because the U.S. District Court Judge William Orrick III has close ties to Planned Parenthood, and yet he did not disqualify himself from making this judgment. The horror should be not that this man exposed what was going on, but that Planned Parenthood illegally traded in aborted baby body parts. Utterly gross. And let's stick in the USA and back to Chick-fil-A. Now, this is a complex story, and I am going to write about it. But Chick-fil-A has announced that they are no longer going to fund the Salvation Army and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Now, they say they're donating their money to help unemployed and the homeless and so on, which is all wonderful. But there is a little bit more to this than meets the eye, because Chick-fil-A have been under enormous pressure for apparently contributing to anti-LGBT. And so they seem to be rowing back on this. Now, they now seem to be rowing back on what they rowed back on. But let me just put it very simply this way. I find this really disappointing because Chick-fil-A are giving in to the bullies. And when you give in to bullies, you encourage them. Chick-fil-A are a major corporation who have not suffered any loss from sticking by their Christian principles, not in being anti-LGBT. That's a nonsense. The Salvation Army are not anti-LGBT, but because they uphold a Christian view of marriage. Now, instead, Chick-fil-A are going to give a lot of money to a group called Covenant House International. And Covenant House International make their workers sign a statement saying they agree with LGBT rights. There's little doubt that Chick-fil-A are doing this because of pressure. They have given into pressure. They've given into the bullying. And it is extremely disappointing. I actually think it will do them a great deal of harm, but perhaps worse than that, it will do the rest of us even more harm, because the bullies think, we won, we will get our way, we just have to keep doing it.
I promise.
My vision.
Our manifesto.
Your choice.
Well, let's go to the United Kingdom and to the general election. And here's a bit of a report from BBC reporter Tobias Chappell.
Pretty soon, you'll have to choose which party you want to vote for. Now, we're not going to tell you where each party stands on every single issue, but here are the real-world LGBT issues which may come up over the election, and what to check for to see if the parties are taking them seriously.
You'll have heard the protests. Now, Tobias Chappell is the BBC LGBT reporter. And that's a fascinating title in and of itself. And what he's produced is quite remarkable in his guide to LGBT issues that the BBC are putting out. He says, check for the real issues. Watch for people talking about indoctrination or questioning LGBT, the LGBT agenda being taught in schools. The parents' right to choose is code for I don't support. Ironically, what he's doing is giving just LGBT propaganda. It's really quite remarkable. This is the state-run broadcaster telling parties what they need to do and what they should put forward, only from one side. There's no balance at all. And here's an example of how perverse it is. So he talks about recorded hate crime increasing and the gulf between hate crime reports and hate crime convictions. There's a reason for that, because recorded hate crime is a nonsense thing. Hate crime, if I was to phone up the police just now and say I had a hate crime, they don't investigate anything, they don't accept anything, they don't question anything, they just have to do it. And so when you tell groups look, hey, tell us about hate crime. I remember one stall in a town in Scotland where people were being asked to come up and sign up and report hate crimes. And hate crime can be virtually anything because their rule is it's in the eye of the beholder. So I've received a significant number of tweets this week which have been remarkably offensive. I could report every single one of them as a hate crime and it would be recorded as such. And that's why the disparity between recorded hate crimes, which is really people complaining about offence, largely, and hate crime convictions is so great, because they're not crimes. There's nothing to investigate. He also talks about reform of the Gender Recognition Act and says watch out for dog whistles, whilst himself giving a massive dog whistle, saying that anyone who is opposed to the idea of people just merely self-identifying as whatever gender they want without any medical intervention, that somehow there's something desperately wrong with them. The ACLU this week from the United States has stated that it's a breach of civil liberties not to recognize that men can have periods and men can be pregnant. Oh, goodness. And meanwhile, in the United Kingdom, our Liberal Democrat Party have come up with a new test act. The old test act was one that banned Roman Catholics from sitting in Parliament. So have the Lib Dems become anti-Catholic? Absolutely. This is what they've done. Rob Fellow, an ex-Labour MP, became a Lib Dem MP. He's Catholic. As a Catholic, he supports the Church's teaching on marriage and on abortion. And so because of that, the Lib Dems have banned him from standing in this election and have done so because they said his values greatly differ from ours. So a practicing Catholic is being banned from standing in an election because he upholds Catholic doctrine. I don't understand how any Catholic who takes their faith seriously, or indeed any Christian, can vote for a party with such a discriminatory, bigoted, and prejudiced policy. Well, also in the United Kingdom, we have race self-identification. Yep, it's come. We knew it would come. But it's come, well, maybe not surprising. The Universities and Colleges Union believes people should be free to choose their gender and their race. The body representing 120,000 UK academics has said that not only should men be able to identify as women and be treated as female despite their anatomy and their biology, but that race should also be a choice. Our rules commit us to ending all forms of discrimination, bigotry, and stereotyping. A number of years ago, I said on this podcast that I could identify as a 5'5" Chinese woman, and I was told, don't be ridiculous. Well, according to British academics, you can.
You've been on his private plane.
Yes.
You've been to stay on his private island.
Yes.
You've stayed at his home in Palm Beach.
Yes.
The Duke of York generated. It's also not been a good week for the British Crown. Now, season 3 of the Netflix series The Crown is on. The Crown is on, and so far, so good. But in real life, The Crown has had a bad week with this interview from Prince Andrew.
Do I regret the fact that he has quite obviously conducted himself in a manner unbecoming? Yes.
Unbecoming. He was a sex offender.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being polite. In the sense that he was a sex offender.
I don't know what he was doing. I understand that the Queen's team were furious at him for doing this interview. He came across really badly as non-empathetic and so many questions being raised about his conduct. It is little wonder that he says he's going to withdraw from public life. Okay, let's move on to something completely different. Listen to this lovely sound. Shower. Now, here's something that we were told, and it's come back. It's a fashion just now in California and elsewhere amongst all the trendies to take a cold shower. Why? Scientists at Virginia's Commonwealth University School of Medicine reported that taking a 20-degree shower, which is not too cold, preceded by a 5-minute gradual adaptation to make the procedure less shocking, once or twice daily, seemed to boost mood and had an antidepressive effect on people. 3,000 volunteers in the Netherlands have done research which showed that people who ended their showers with a 30-second hit of cold water were less likely to call in sick because it gives you an energy boost similar to a caffeine hit. And there you go. Go take a cold shower. Calm down. Chill out. Now, one of the things that we're doing in Third Space is we're producing a series of videos, which at the moment we're putting out fortnightly, but probably monthly, just looking at various cultural things. And I wonder if you've seen this show.
We'll watch a clip of it, and then my question will then make sense to those who haven't seen The Good Place.
You, Eleanor Shellstrop, are dead.
Cool. How did I die?
Are you sure you want to hear? You were struck by a truck advertising an erectile dysfunction pill called Engorgulate. Funnily enough, the first EMT to arrive was an ex-boyfriend of yours.
Okay, I get it. Thank you.
You're okay, Eleanor. You're in the good place. You are here because you got innocent people off death row.
You are my soulmate.
Cool. Bring it in, man. You'll stand by my side no matter what, right?
Of course I will.
I wasn't a lawyer. There's been a big mistake. I'm not supposed to be here.
Wait, what?
The Good Place. Now, I didn't particularly like it, but my colleague Steve McAlpine really did like it. And we have a very interesting discussion about it. A show about heaven and hell, about good and bad. It seems our culture's fascination with these subjects continues. Okay, let me come back to Australia and come back to the fires. It's interesting that there are 62,000 fires in Australia each year. And here's the thing that really struck me. 13% are caused by lightning, but the vast majority are caused by human beings, who 40% are deliberately lit and another 47% are accidentally lit. There are people who are going around deliberately lighting fires. Now, when I'm lying in my bed this morning and the smoke is choking my lungs, which is what happened, I find I react to smoke pretty badly. I just think of those people who go around and deliberately, why do they deliberately start fires? And the same thing with, you know, the human sinfulness. Sadly, there are some people who are voluntary fire workers, and they don't get paid unless there's a fire. And so there has been some evidence of some starting fires deliberately, bringing disgrace on the vast majority of their colleagues. But sadly, that's human nature. Okay, I think we're going to go. Please do keep us in touch with all the various things that are going on in the world. You know, there are so many things that are discouraging and depressing, and yet there is so much that is good and so much that is wonderful. I was thinking about this, listening to this song a little bit from AC/DC, thinking about a Scot who came from Kirriemuir over to Australia. Bon Scott joined a band which became one of the biggest bands in the world. I think AC/DC have the seventh largest, highest grossing tour of all time, $441 million they grossed in their Black Ice World Tour. I think of U2 being here this weekend, selling out stadiums to 50,000, the amount of money that they make. But the sad thing in all of this is Bon Scott died from probably drinking drugs overdose very young. Just a desperately sad waste of talent. And actually AC/DC is a desperately sad waste of talent because they sang about sin, basically, and there's some great songs and some great riffs. But at the end of the day, they offered nothing and they had nothing. And now they're coming towards the end of their career and the end of their lives, confused, sad, probably lonely. That's a kind of world without hope and a world without Christ. And I thank God that in the midst of all that we face, we don't have to have that. I love what my colleague Steve McAlpine says, which is my quote of the month. We're combining conservative theology with radical ecclesiology. We're looking for porous ways of bringing in people at the boundaries. That's what we've got to do. We've got to communicate the gospel to a world that's on fire. May God bless you all and see you next week.